saxophone.
I usually feel insecure about being a poet, but this evening I feel insecure about the musician, so maybe I feel a bit better about the poetry. Hello is the first thing to say. How are you doing?
Well,
if you're grand now, I'm going to depress you extraordinarily, because today and Halloween, in Mexico, it's the festival of the day of the dead. And so just when I was sitting down in a cafe trying to find all the poems for tonight, I thought I would read poems for any poems that I had that had to do with death or dying. So you're in for a cheery start. I'm not sure, I'm going to just let the musicians see if they can follow me with my bit of grimness. But the first one anyway is a suitably spooky one. It's called Cold Cases. Some doors should stay shut, not all are portals. Some conceal sleeping things that are less ferocious, left undisturbed behind them. Let's whisper this time, can't we? Let's not go in there, sharp stick poking. Turn now with me, this time let's keep on walking. The second poem is again, it's at the Halloween scene. Hopefully you're not too scared. This is a poem called It's the Dark. On this day of halogen and helium, we're dodging shadows, our eyes squinting against the late afternoon sun. But it's with us, despite the whiteness. It's a hand not held in a dark bedroom, in a dark house, on a dark street where no one ever thought to leave a light on for us. It's every unblown birthday candle, a school of sorts, an education. It's a taunting lane with pine trees and wind channel down it. It's the terror that made our fat legs pedal faster, made us flee it, as if in the bright light of the kitchen, hours later, we still wouldn't feel it. It's that car journey we didn't want to go on, those other headlights sweeping past in freedom, and our relentless windscreen wipers beating rhythm to a place we swore we'd never get to, and the morning light won't relinquish. It's a bridge in an inferno problem, and I can tell you there's no crossing back over. It's the confessional where we don't know what to say or even who to answer. It's 100 pagan folk memories, nameless, because they never tried to conquer it, because it's the dark. It's the dark. It's the dark, and it's best to leave it be. Are you depressed yet? A few years ago, because I was thinking of the Day of the Dead, a few years ago I spent a bit of time in Mexico, and I found it really, really fascinating. I had no effect on Mexico whatsoever because I'm a bit small, but I just found in my life it had an enormous effect. So some of these next poems are about that. And this is a poem that was written in memory of a young migrant man from Honduras, Julio Fernando Cardona, and he was making his way through Mexico to the United States to work illegally with hundreds and hundreds of other young people, and we had been part of a migrants caravan. Basically, they had roped in as many foreigners as they could, in journalists and newspaper people and everything, to try and demonstrate that the Mexican government could keep people safe when it needed to. And so we had accompanied them as far as Mexico City from way down in the south, and 2 days after we left, two of them were murdered just outside Mexico City. And I suppose they were murdered for practically no reason, you know, no reason. They just became collateral on that journey. And this is a poem about that. I've been reminded of it a lot recently, just when I see it has come a lot nearer home, you know, in Calais and in places like that, all the way through Britain. So this is a poem for Julio, and it's called The Night After the Assassination. And I would swallow condoms full of this star sky and smuggle them home for you, if you'd only tell me where you live now. And if they burst in my intestines, you'll never know. I swallowed stars for you. And I diced the moon with razors on the mirror of the sea and sniffed it past watering eyes to the back caverns of my skull, just to show it to you on the day of the dead. The moon can hang there while I bribe the border guards. I'd brave the border with these decorations from a humid night and the heat. I hid in undergarments and stone between bare feet and shoes in the first place they'd think to look. I did it because I wanted to be found. On the day of the dead, something similar. Things seem to repeat themselves in cycles. And I see at the moment the indigenous people in the United States are all trying to oppose the pipeline there. And so this is a poem about something. It's a poem about something similar. But we often think of Canada as a kind of a nice, safe, squeaky clean country. But in Mexico and Central America, Canadian mining countries are decimating the place down there, and the indigenous people who stand in their way very often become they just become victims of it. You know, there's a real price, as people are finding out, to kind of standing up for yourself. So this is for a man who was murdered down there, and that was in 2009. His name was Mariano Abarca. At 6:10 here, you'll be able to mourn the disappearance of the tropical sun that baked your hairline at 10:10. 200 whole languages have vanished, and the people who objected are invisible, washing windscreens at city junctions. The Virgin of Guadalupe, though, appeared as if from nowhere in 1531, and 1910 had every appearance of a revolution. But Blackfire exploration can show up from Canada to atomize a mountain and its villages in 6 months, and though there's no apparent department for state disappearances, Mariano Abarca, who resisted, disappeared. No one saw anything. And the raped virgin soil saw nothing. How are you doing with the music?
How are you doing with us?
I'm doing fine, but I can see people actually losing the will to live here. No, is it too sinister? It is Halloween, after all. It is the Day of the Dead. So this one is a little bit cheerier. Well, actually, it's not. It's worse. I suppose this is a poem about all that stuff. You know, when you're traveling around, all that stuff, you watch it, and it's almost as if you're seeing it on television, because it doesn't relate directly to your own life, because you can go back home. And I suppose this is a poem about that, really, just about kind of feeling guilty about, you know, even just using people in your poems and standing here a few years later when they're gone. So it's I suppose it's a bit of Catholicism mixed in for the evening. So we call this All Saints. It's called Shut Up.
Okay.
I'd lay the corpses face down, muted and neat, then lay their ghosts. I wouldn't have their swollen feet swing from ceilings where I sleep. I wouldn't get sidetracked by grief, but it wasn't really me who lost if I was no one. The violated wouldn't ever speak out loud to me on the streets, in car parks, or on the stacked up aisles of supermarkets packed with things I'd never need or be entitled to if I was no one. I'd never have to listen to women, either dead or walking, insisting that I spare them my sympathy, telling me that I too have traded in their currency and bartered flesh for shelter, for protection, if I was no one. This mercenary marching army of the dead, the raped, the sold, all chanting, spare us your sympathy, sweetheart. Our debts were paid in spades of heavy earth, dead sounding on the empty, unmarked graves of who we could have been or were. They'd never get away with it if I was no one. And this racket of the never thanked, the live but left, who have never countered, never challenged and still won't, they'd get no hearing, they'd shut up. If I was no one, I'd sleep alone, but these days, there's just no talking to them. This is a poem from a bit nearer home. It's another kind of a similar vein, but it's I suppose just the you know, the austerity measures that happened in Ireland, to my mind at least, they seem to hit hardest on people who were just about hanging on, basically. And so, you know, I suppose people that I grew up with and that I knew, and you know, that we'd all struggled through various different problems, I suppose, with, you know, mental health problems, and, you know, dealing with, I suppose, coming out in a very Catholic country, and all sorts of different things. And so it just seemed to me that in the at a time that coincided with the recession, people that I knew in my own circle, three different women all ended their own lives. Now, all of them had had various problems of different sorts till they got there, but, you know, they'd always managed until the cutbacks happened. And I think that in some ways is the human cost, that those, whatever supports they had, were kind of taken from them. And this is a poem about that. It's a sequence, just in case I confuse anyone. So there's five separate little bits in it, and it's called Someone's Always Losing Someone Else. and it's for Lisa, Anna, and Nikki. Train wreck. The last time you missed me was with the rock at my window. And the last time I missed you was when I had that book I wanted to give you. You'd got that dog then, and you looked content. Believe it or not, I think I might have been jealous of, but I told myself, going on precedent, there's a good chance we'll just write this. So I left it. And at Christmas you texted, saying I miss you already. And I said, what is it with us? What is it? You just sent X's. You're a train wreck. And I already miss you. I want you back. And I remember Cuba nightclub, you dancing to the Jackson 5, and us fizzing out into Air Square later, with you telling me no day trippers need apply. Not some month's mind notice, in a shop window in the rain, a few short years later, insisting that you've died. Bell book and candle book. You'd open the slim book you bought in the second-hand shop for €2. Sartre, what else? On its title page you'll find your friend's name written in blue ink. It's a small town, this one, the smallest. You'll flick through it to the page where you find she's got the words anguish, abandonment and despair underlined in red. And you'll find you've nothing left to say. Meanwhile, you'll stop outside the pharmacy thinking of tranquilizers, but knowing the nerve endings that are holding you up would give way in a clock tick if you gave them the slightest excuse. You won't let them. That's vital. You'll go in though and sit in the photo booth. You'll feed coins to it and take what it offers. Four little squares with your face on it. Proof of some kind or another. Proof your own flesh couldn't give you. Lost souls and popcorn. Fancy boys who look like you and you and me on screen in stolen afternoon cinema trips. Where everyone's crossed out and timeless. And though I know at the outset there's no future in it, I'll sit through it mouth open. Even though I know who did it and who didn't, I'll watch the credits till they're finished. I'll watch the credits till they're finished. Me, I'll watch the credits till they're finished. That's for Lisa, Anna, and Nikki. Using my very complicated set list here. This is a great big ranty one coming for you next. If I can find it. This is a poem called Problems with Authority. It's basically just one of those poems. Again, it's a kind of a slightly less personal one, but I was thinking one day actually that we're never scared of the things we should be scared of, and actually probably the most the thing we should probably be scared of most if you're a human in the world is the actions of states. And so this is a poem about that. In Mexico they murdered and disappeared 43 students there 2 years ago from a place called Ayotzinapa. But the graffiti that was all over Mexico at the time was No se olvido fue el Estado, and it was saying, don't forget, it was the state. And so that, I mean, it absolutely was. It was some weird little corruption thing. But this is a poem about that. I don't know what to tell you about it. It's got some words in it. Arms into torso, my limbs melted. Long before I heard of Tunisia, of Ben Ali or Mohammed Bouazizi. Before I knew anything about economics, I twisted in distressed white bed linen whilst in the cane fields, my skin wheeled from Irish overseer's whips. I was spread-eagled over hot car metal on a million occasions, had my hands up way before Ferguson. Before Michael Brown was gunned down, I dreamt it. And in Pagram, old Blighty's techniques made me so homesick that when I woke in Amber Grave, facing Lady England's lens, I almost missed my grandfather. Since before thumb-sucking finished, I took part in progress, or at least that's what the bosses called it when my young fingers blistered in NAFTA sweatshops, making toys for other children, while my mother risked her cheek life walking home through Juarez, where your worst prospect is La Policia. In Ayotzinapa, I suffocated from petrol and black fumes, but I found my grave chock full with corpses showing clear signs of torture. And because the cemeteries and city dumps were filled already with bloody Sunday victims of the lockdown children of the laptop, with Ken Sarawiwa and his many, many sisters. They left me faceless on the highway in Chalapa, but I was not surprised. I expect such things from armies. Sometimes, in my darkened bedroom, I speak to Ai Weiwei about whether art matters, but he doesn't ever answer, and I feel the walls close in. I hear wolf whistles from the air. I know the feeling of gravel on my cheek as I lie prone in an old man prison waiting for what might or might not happen. I know the sound of uniforms rustling, of boots and questioning my marching, and when I wake, I think of Chelsea Manning. In times of R.E.M., I get momentarily euphoric, dreaming of just before death moments of defiance, of fists raised by Carlo Dimiani, by Remy Frass, and Rachel Parry, how they stand there like slim silhouettes while tanks bear down in a thousand Tiananmen's. But it only lasts a few quick seconds before I'm disturbed by the thought of their coffin lids shining. And I sit up and throw the quilt off as if it caused my suffocation, as if it caused these recurrent nightmares, when in truth my biggest fear belongs to daylight. Despite the history of middlemen and overseers, despite the history of authority figures, despite Hiroshima and Nagasaki, my biggest fear is how still and all I want to trust them. And I'm writing to remind myself that all through history, it's the authorities who've done the worst things. How are we doing for time and depression levels?
Totally depressed.
I'm going to finish with two more poems. Both of them are slightly happier, and I don't think many people die in them. Let me just check. Yeah, no, well, one of them is debatable. Some of them are dead, so therefore they died, but they don't die in the poem. So this next poem is a poem called Desire, and I'll just read it because it's slightly more cheerful than the first one. It's actually called Desire Runs Rings Around Me, and I don't mind. This, now we'll have to stop the funeral music. Women, in your many slanted humours, and me with mine, you saunter in on fearless and resourceful feet, with your adaptable hands, your appropriate limbs and those flexible minds. You hold me as you would a child's hand, a sharp blade, an injured bird, a half-run neck, an amulet. You play me like an old accordion, easing out its leather skin until, like a kite, skylarking on its thin strings, despite myself, I sing. Everywhere to waste like an unlimited planet, heaving to a rusting iron gate or a harbour full of empty sails. You just lie at ease and wait. Women, you ride those feet-foot pulleys roughshod over anything you want, and never fall, never falter, never doubt you. Your time has always come, and you need me about as much as old viewers, as a fortune teller's death, or yesterday's hammer today. And run your rings around me, I won't mind. I love how women know things, I find them wise. That is what the empty fool in me desires. I only have all these books with me because I was looking for the poems with dead people in them. Otherwise one would have done. I realised as well when I came here, I was at a poetry festival last week, and there was a guy there, and he came up to me afterwards and he said, oh, I really enjoyed that, I'd like to get your book, but I don't have the money now, can I get it in a bookshop? And I gave him the poems I had on papers, you know, just on pages. So when I was sitting just before I came in here, I realised that I had two press releases with me and no poems, because I had given them to the guy at the last poetry festival. So count your blessings that I'm not doing improvisation on a press release for tomorrow. I'll finish with this poem unless I haven't earned my money yet. This is called For the Living and the Dead. And it's a kind of a slightly more up-tempo one. Still miserable, but up-tempo. Miserable and tempo. They're discussing something behind me in case you're waiting.
Yeah,
which keys?
Which keys?
Which keys?
Okay.
Okay, so this is called For the Living of the Dead. Are we off? Truth is every ending predetermined. Truth is passion, everything lies with vision working. Truth is every lie told, each and trick fiction, and it's your politics. Truth is all those spectres that exist only in your wildest dreams and cravings. Truth is every act you've ever made of each and every pigment. Truth is every word you ever loved, and those you fought but didn't. Truth is parents real love, getting his young life beaten in Store Street Station. Truth is every reluctant surrender in its response. Truth is over and sin, and there's truth in every unjust occupation. Truth is in the bureaucrats, the grafters. Truth is Rachel Corrie, all those dreamers. Truth is every deportee, each exile who sings a sad lament for leaving. Truth is finished in the spectacle, and there's truth in every single new minute. Truth is in your ear, your socks, your window cleaner. Truth is in the cold of your head, and truth is in your wastebasket. Truth is in the glib and fell of all these stations, and the things your intellect can't fathom. Truth is in the market, your buyers, sellers, unrequited. Truth is the slipstream that it marks on every trite denial. Truth is in your hoardings. Truth is in the secrets and its flamboyant on the billboards. Truth is on the busy streets they're walking. Truth lives on deserted lanes and bodies in sheltered corners. Truth is in the fibers where your DNA is deciphered. Truth is in the learning, more even the forgetting. There's no true thing that doesn't end, nor even in the life that lasts. Truth is bloated with its own importance. Truth is, it doesn't matter, because every single thing is true. Thanks very much, everyone.
And a round of applause for the panel, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much.